Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Game 3 and the Celtics have a chance to take a 3-0 lead. It's a crossover episode with Locked On Raptors, and hey, the Open's back. Millie's, let's go. Jay's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Hey, John Corral is here from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Yes, I was able to recreate the Open. I don't have any of the other music, but right now I've got this. It's a start. A little bit of the production value is coming back. So, and if the Celtics lose, maybe I get rid of the production value. How about that? But in the meantime, I had a nice conversation with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors. We'll get to that in just a moment. I want to implore all of you to subscribe. If you're a new listener, if you're one of the Raptors listeners, to come over and subscribe to Locked On Celtics to get the Celtics perspective on the show. If you're a Celtics fan, go check out Locked On Raptors. Subscribe to them as well. They do a great job. Sean's a great guy. And how can you not like a Canadian? So go subscribe to their show. Support them. Support the Locked On folks. And support our fellow NBA podcasters. Here is... now, the conversation, heading into Game 3, what works, what didn't, what can we expect? It's me with Locked On Raptors host, Sean Woodley.
Toronto Raptors trail 0-2 to the Boston Celtics. You should be much happier considering what the Celtics have done to the Raptors through two games. I'm surprised Marcus Smart's out-of-body experience doesn't have you in a better mood today.
No, I'm actually very happy. I'm actually very happy.
Yeah, I'm rotten. I'm feeling rotten after that Marcus Smart BS in the fourth quarter.
Have you seen Princess Bride? Where
I've seen like bits and pieces, not the whole thing.
The scene in Princess Bride where they go to Miracle Max, and he makes up excuses to not do the miracle, and his wife comes out, and she starts saying liar, and then she starts saying the name Humperdinck over and over again because she knows he hates that name. I assume that that's how Raptors fans feel like when they hear Marcus Smart. Yeah, Marcus Smart. Ah. Marcus Smart, I'm not listening. Like, it's just a big, angry, like, you don't want to hear it. The mere mention of his name just draws your ire.
Yeah, that checks out. I haven't really even stopped to go and watch the 90 seconds within which he sunk the Raptors in game two with those three. So let me just ask you, before we get into any, like, nitty-gritty stuff, like, what the hell was that? And have you ever seen Marcus Smart do... literally anything close to resembling that? I know Marcus Smart makes winning plays. Ha ha ha. I'm Michael Pina. I named my podcast after things I say about Marcus Smart. And I know he, you know, as a Kyle Lowry appreciator, I can kind of understand Marcus Smart thing as well, because he's clearly a very smart basketball player. He clearly does the little things that annoy other people. He's on the refs. He flops. I would argue he flops more than literally any person I've ever seen in the history of the NBA. And were he on my team, I would certainly say, hell yeah, Marcus Smart, that's my dude. Of course, he is on the team that is sinking the team that I like and cover and support. And that is not good. And that does not make me feel warm and nice. But yeah, what was that for Marcus Smart? Has anything like that ever happened before? What's going on in sort of a more sort of series level with his three-point shooting so far in the series? I know he was like league average this season, but he's been ridiculous so far through two games.
Yeah, I mean, he has this ability. And even before, like the last two seasons, he's been right around league average. Last year was a little bit better. But he has these stretches and has had stretches where once he gets hot, he can really get hot. I was in the building where when he hit 11 three-pointers and set a Boston Celtics record. He shot 11 for 22 in January against Phoenix. So he's done that before, and him hitting 5 three-pointers in a game is, or 6 three-pointers in a game, not unusual. I mean, he's done that probably like a dozen times this year. he can, when he gets that confidence going, when he gets hot, it's just one of those things where you just got to ride it out and hope that once he misses, he kind of forgets that the heater's over and he jacks up like two or three bad ones. But like, that's just something that as a Celtics guy, I can't count on that. Like, I don't come into any games where I think, well, Marcus Smart shooting is going to bail the Celtics out. But I also know that once he hits a couple, it's like, uh-oh, is this one of those nights? And the past two, which just happened to be two in a row, that it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so frustrating to talk about game two as well. And I had a hard time, and I've had a hard time sort of reconciling it all, because I think on balance, the Raptors should have won that game. They played better. They were kind of in control going into the fourth quarter. And as we often see in playoff series, just like random weird occurrences can kind of swing it, and you don't have 82 games of normalization to count on to sort of make things snap back to normal. And you're kind of stuck sitting through that outburst at the start of the fourth. And look, it's not like the Raptors did themselves any favors after Marcus Smart finished hitting all those threes and they had to close out the game pretty much from, and they did not do so well in that. And their late game execution was bad, as we talked about on yesterday's Locked On Raptors and all of that. But it just, you know, it feels like everything went pretty reasonably well for the Raptors. And it feels like they probably should have like won that game based on the process of everything, based on open looks they got. I mean, they go 11 of 40 from three after going 10 of 40 in game one. And I think by and large, the looks have been there. I'm not sure of the exact numbers in game two, but I know the expected field goal percentage from the Raptors in game one was better than Boston's, even though they lost by 18. And it's just, you kind of throw your hands up in the air and say, like, what the hell? And like that from Marcus Smart happens, because I think it was Kevin Pelton who tweeted this. Like, we spend all this time analyzing and breaking down matchups and rotations and all this stuff, but sometimes it's just Marcus Smart hit five threes in 90 seconds. Right. And that is the game. And it's just, it's a frustrating one to try to break down and understand, because it doesn't really make sense.
No, it doesn't really make sense. The Kemba Walker 11 points in the final 7 minutes make more sense. But it really, Sean, it comes down to execution, right? Like, we talk about how many times you sit there and say, who's the best player in the series? Who's going to step up and make a play? And at the end of this game, it was just Boston stepping up and making plays, and Kemba Walker stepping up and making plays, and Jason Tatum, beyond the Marcus Smart stuff. Like, Marcus Smart's shots, let's be real, only gave Boston a 1-point lead. Basically, he leveled the game. So whatever was happening earlier, he just erased Boston's slow start earlier, or Toronto's hot start, whatever perspective you want to take. But after Marcus Smart hit his free throw, his last three-pointer where he got fouled made it 85-85. And then he hit the free throw, then Lowry hit a layup, and Toronto has a lead with 7.5 minutes to go. And then what happens? Kemba Walker starts making shots, and the Raptors don't. Lowry misses, Van Vliet misses, Ananobi misses. You're just going down, the play-by-play. Van Vliet had a wide-open three-pointer in the corner with the Raptors down six that could have cut the lead down to three. And instead, Kemba Walker comes down and makes a layup, and next thing you know, it's an 8-point lead with 4 minutes to go and things starting to, like, slip away. The Celtics had their guys making plays. And maybe the biggest question here for me, from the outside, looking at this Raptors team, they're awesome in transition. They're not great in the half court. And why weren't they great in the half court? Because as much as we like to pump up Pascal Siakam, and he's an all-star and he's a great player, I mean, I love watching Pascal Siakam, but he's not, I don't think, at that next level yet. And if Kyle Lowry is not getting out in transition, who's the guy that's going to be hitting all of these shots in the half court? Who's the creator in the half court that's going to go out there and get you that bucket? That, I think, from a Toronto perspective, for me, that was going to be one of the biggest differences in the series.
More of the conversation with me and Sean in just a moment. But first, rockauto.com is the place to go for all of your auto parts needs. When I say auto parts, it could be complicated, like something with your engine. It could be something simple, like a taillight, a headlight, or windshield wipers. Whatever your level, whatever you need for your car, go to rockauto.com. Save the time, save the trip. Don't go to one of those auto parts chain stores that you find in a strip mall. It's not worth your time. All they're going to do is spend the same amount of time that you would take at home entering information into your computer the way they enter it into their computer. You know that their space is limited. You know that their supply is limited. How could they possibly have all of the things that you need in there? So don't waste your time. Stay at home. Just like you order stuff from other online outlets, you can do the same with your car through rockauto.com, and you can save a lot. Why would you choose to spend 30 to 50 to 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or at a dealership? That doesn't make any sense. What also doesn't make any sense is the fact that they have different prices for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. How is that fair? How is it fair for their prices to fluctuate based on what the market will bear? RockAuto.com is for everybody. No membership required, no login required. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So no matter what it is, complicated to simple, RockAuto.com has it. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts that are available for your car or truck. And here's a very important part. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. That's very important. It helps us out a lot. It's an amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at RockAuto.com.
Yeah, I mean, that's of course going to be Young Prince Ananobi, maybe, I don't know. Yeah, no, you're totally right, man. This has been the question for the Raptors that we were talking about quite literally every single day on Locked On Raptors going in the playoffs and thinking about matchups against Boston and Milwaukee. And I think Milwaukee was sort of the team most people had on their minds as, you know, this like transcendent defensive team that are they going to score enough in the half court on them? But guess what? Boston's incredible in the half court too. And they just so happened to be monstrous defending in transition as well. And, you know, I know the Raptors got out on the run a little bit more last night and they had some success, especially early on. But, you know, Boston wasn't going to let that continue. And, you know, it kind of is a bit of a spiral effect as well because, you know, when things don't work in transition and then you can't get your offense flowing, then you're not able to defend the best way you want to at the other end. It's all very simple, rudimentary basketball theory stuff. But, you know, if you're not getting the stops that you need and forcing the turnovers that you need because in part you're not, you know, putting the defense, you're not getting back in defense because you're not scoring at the other end, it just kind of is a self-fulfilling thing where, you know, you can't do the thing you do best and that bleeds into every other part of your game. That said, I think the Raptors played a pretty good game and I think their defense has been quite good so far through two games. I don't think Boston's getting much easy necessarily. I think Tatum, you know, is going to get his because he's a monster and just have not quite done the thing where I'm expecting them to at some point where they just throw OG on Tatum and, you know, kind of say, all right, we're not switching anymore. We're not going to, you know, throw Lowry on him and get cute and have OG and Pascal work as off ball guys. We're just going to have OG and potentially Pascal as well, who got a couple steals off of Tatum last night. We're just going to throw them on 10, hope it works, then everything else can kind of fall into place. And that kind of leads me to a question for you, John, sort of looking into game three, you know, after what you saw in game two, where there were some adjustments. I just think it was more just the Raptors played a little bit better, really, as like rudimentary and simplistic as that sounds. I don't think they made any sort of grand alterations to the way they play. I alluded to a few on the Tuesday postgame podcast, sort of things that I think the Raptors can do to really sort of try to put the Celtics going into game three. But from your perspective as someone who is on the Celtics side of all this, is there something that you're looking at from the Raptors and saying, ooh, I hope they don't do that because that could cause some problems for Boston?
I don't know if there's any one particular thing that's going to get that kind of reaction because I think Boston can adjust. I think the first thing you got to do is get Marc Gasol out of the starting lineup. I think Ibaka has killed the Celtics enough where, I mean, maybe it's because he's coming off the bench that he's hitting these shots, but I don't think so. I think he's just hitting those shots. And Gasol, aside from, by the way, the most hilarious slow motion, slowest backdoor cut I've ever seen in my life on the first bucket of the game, where he basically slowly tiptoed behind Daniel Tice. I think that when Gasol fouled out late in game two, I thought, oh my God, that's actually bad for the Celtics, because he was being attacked over and over and over again. And he just doesn't have that foot speed to keep up with what the Celtics can throw at him. At least Ibaka can kind of keep up and protect the rim a little bit more. So that'd be the first thing that I would do. But I think the Celtics can, I mean, I don't think they have a problem throwing Robert Williams in there a little bit earlier and trying to counter with that. And he's been really good in the series. And if you do decide to go with Anunoby on Jason Tatum, then I'm looking for Tatum, who had six assists in this game, to maybe have more than that and Jaylen Brown to start going, because Jaylen Brown has had a couple of like poor shooting games. I thought generally he was defensively pretty good, but if Toronto does what you're saying, then I expect Tatum to become a facilitator and really try to move the ball, and maybe Jaylen Brown can start picking up some easier baskets, because I think Jaylen Brown's trying to create a little bit for himself, and that's not going very well. Jaylen Brown needs to like catch the ball, you know, drive in kicks and hit some corner threes. So frankly, I think the Celtics have Toronto's number, and the matchup is just a bad one for Toronto, because the Celtics, even they haven't been getting back in transition extraordinarily well, but they've been doing well enough where they're really cutting off the biggest strength that the Raptors have.
Totally. And look, I think Norman Powell playing a minimal role so far in this series is kind of a big part of that too, because he is a demon in transition. So good when he gets on the run, whether it's, you know, hitting threes on the trail, whether it's just kind of, you know, driving himself and finishing. And when you don't have that element, because he's not really feeling himself, you know, things just get a little bit tricky, and you don't really trust Terrence Davis. And Chris Boucher had moments of nice energy, but you're not really thrilled about the idea of Chris Boucher playing a ton of minutes either. And so, like, one of the adjustments just to have Norm Powell play better, because he opens up a few things, you know, not just in transition, but also in the half court, as a guy who can drive and, you know, cause some havoc, who's become a finisher around the rim, who's become a better drive and kick guy. If you have that operating, you don't have to rely so much on Fred VanVleet over dribbling at 6 feet tall with big dudes in his face. You don't have to worry about Pascal Siakam posting up a dozen times and trying to get stuff out of that. Although I thought they did a better job in game two of having Pascal post up, and Siakam, to his credit, was much better at diagnosing when the double was coming, diagnosing when they weren't sending a double, and just sort of taking it to the basket. You know, he obviously didn't shoot terribly well, but he had six assists, and I thought his decisiveness early on was much better. And that, you know, you mentioned the Ibaka thing and the Gasol thing, and that is, you know, I disagree. I think there is something the Raptors can do to throw at the Celtics and kind of make them think a little bit, but it is kind of predicated on Powell figuring himself, because I am honestly almost ready to not see Ibaka or Gasol late in these games. You know, Ibaka, look, I love Serge Ibaka with all of my heart on and off the court. He's just like a wonderful, wonderful person. I would happily give him an extension just to keep him around, just as a dude to be on the Raptors, because, Raptors fans have their title. They can enjoy a fun team for a couple of years is kind of my host about it all. But when it comes to Ibaka, like, he kind of, it's weird because he is this security blanket on offense who will happily take those above the break threes that Marc Gasol is afraid to take. And, you know, it's a valuable piece of the offense, but I kind of feel like sometimes when Ibaka gets going, you can kind of just be like, take him out now, please, because they're going to sort of funnel things to him too much, and then things will taper off, and then you kind of see what you saw at the end of the third and start of the fourth in the game on Tuesday, where it just, you know, running the offense through Serge Ibaka as your number one option is not going to work for you longer than a couple minutes here and there against second units. And so with that, I kind of like the idea of them just going small and playing Seattle Siakam at center. I put this on Tuesday's podcast, and sorry for rehashing this for Raptors fans, but I think this is the last big card the Raptors have to play. And if you play Pascal at the four, you throw an OG at the four. Sorry, Pascal at the five, OG at the four, and then Norm, VanVleet, and Lowry. You know, maybe that's a little bit small, 1-2-3, but that's a lot of ball handling, Lowry and Fred can both guard up in size a little bit. You're not too worried, I think, about Lowry guarding. I mean, they've had him on Tatum for most of this series. They don't think they're worried about him guarding bigger guys. He can do it. And so maybe you can get away with it a little bit to skew smaller. And then I feel like that just kind of sets things up where, A, you're not really relying much on, you know, Ibaka and Gasol in pick and roll coverage on defense, which they have not been good in, because Kemba Walker, you know, while he was 1 of 8 from three yesterday, very easily could have bombed 5 on the Raptors' heads very easily, because there was nobody in his way. It was sort of a half-assed drop coverage that wasn't really working. They weren't getting up high enough. They weren't dropping back far enough. It was just no man's land. And I kind of think that's exposed Gasol and Ibaka a little bit so far with all the pull-up shooting that the Celtics have. And so if you have Siakam at center and he can be involved in those screen actions, he's so long, he's so quick, he rotates so well, I kind of think you mitigate those issues a little bit and make it a little bit more difficult for a Kemba Tatum to pull up, you know, kind of unencumbered. And you also on offense kind of invite Siakam to be more of a screener, which I think they have not done enough of. And when they have done it, it's been to sort of get these silly switches onto Marcus Smart, which stop doing that, please. Bad. It's not good. Don't do it anymore. And you know, I think having him work pick and roll as like a roll man or as a pick and pop guy is just a better way to get Siakam into positions where he can be successful as well. So I don't know. What do you think, John, about the idea of going small for the Raptors? If they were to sort of skew small and play Pascal at the 5, does that give you a little nervousness if you're Boston?
Back with more with me and Sean in just a moment. But first, I cannot wait for this delivery from Built Bar. I just put in an order for their new bars. I know they're going to be even better than the bars that I already love. Those were already delicious, but these new flavors are amazing. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake. What? This is a protein bar, and it's a healthy protein bar. It's not one of those things with a ton of carbs and sugars. This is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber for you, the health conscious person out there that wants to lose weight or maintain weight. If you're on a keto diet, boom, this is exactly what you want. It's covered in 100% chocolate. It's soft. It's easy to chew. It's delicious. And you're going to get something that's no more than 180 calories, and you're still going to get 18 grams of protein. You want to drop it to 130 calories? You can still get 17 grams of protein in some of these. That's a lot without a lot of sugar. 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs. You're not going to get that anywhere else. So go to builtbar.com. And if you've already used the promo code Locked On, doesn't matter. You can use it again. Go right now to builtbar.com. Use the promo code Locked On. You'll get $10 off your next order. So even if you've used it once, they've reset it. Use the promo code Locked On for $10 off at builtbar.com.
You know, it'd be interesting to see how that went, because I still think the Celtics could play Robert Williams, and I think he could. Like, I'd like to see how that worked. This is where not having Gordon Hayward really hurts, because if you threw Siakam at the 5 and the Celtics had to run with Hayward in there with Tatum, Brown, Kemba, and Smart, I'd be like, yes, finally, this is a team that is playing into the Celtics' best 5, quote-unquote best 5 lineup. It's their best 5 players that they've tried to use a few times, and it's worked in small doses, but like it wouldn't work against Miami because Bam Adebayo is too big, too strong. But against Toronto, I'm like, oh man. I mean, Gordon can guard Pascal Siakam. I mean, he's definitely. So I don't know how the Celtics, you could throw any number of different looks in there. You can try Robert Williams and say, hey, you're too small. Try guarding these lobs and just run a bunch of picks and like, okay, fine. That may fix a scoring issue that the Raptors have, but does it create a defensive issue that the Celtics can exploit? And then if the Celtics happen to be up and we're just trading baskets, then I think the Celtics are good with that. But if Robert Williams doesn't show that he can guard Siakam on the perimeter, if he gets too lost and that's too much to ask, then they can try Grant Williams, who I know is a rookie, but did hold his own in Game 2 and can at least slide his feet and be quick enough and strong enough where if Siakam bowls into him, Grant Williams is not going anywhere. And you could try the same with Semi Ojeleye, who is kind of hit or miss. And in game one, he was good because I think he could handle the Siakam post-ups. Game two, he wasn't because he wasn't sliding his feet and he wasn't staying in front of Siakam. So kind of depending on how the game flow, one of those two guys can kind of step in. I feel like the counter, that counter allows too much, from a Toronto perspective, too much Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown being able to shoot over the top. But arguing with myself in the moment and say, well, maybe that could bait those two guys into going into ISO. And if the Celtics go ISO, then that could be what wins the game for Toronto. But if the Celtics move the ball and get themselves good looks with ball movement, then they can shoot over the top of that defensive lineup on the perimeter. And I think you run the risk of a Jaylen Brown getting hot from three, Jason Tatum getting hot from three, and having this game get away from you again.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, again, for the Raptors, it's a trade-off of, you know, you take out Gasol and Ibaka. Ibaka, I think, has definitely been, at worst, like the third best Raptor so far in this series. You could argue maybe second. And Gasol, who hasn't looked great, but, you know, does offer very good rim protection and, in theory, offers three-point shooting and playmaking. Can you justify taking those two out and putting in Norm, who has not been good so far and has not really made his impact felt on the series whatsoever? And, you know, again, a lot of it is very reductive sounding when you talk about what the Raptors have done so far, but like Norm Powell has to play better. Pascal Siakam has to play better. And yes, the Celtics are doing things to make things difficult on them, but I also think there's certainly some agency that they have to just play less badly than they have so far.
Yeah.
You come here for the good analysis is what you do.
I mean, you're just not going to win with Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry combining to go 3 from 19 from 3. You're just not going to win those games. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. And even though it was close, I think that's your biggest problem, that Fred VanVleet and Marcus Smart have basically switched bodies. And that, you know, hey, it's a Disney thing, right? Like they're, you know, maybe they were peeing in the same fountain and lightning struck and they switched shooting ability. You know, you never know what happens in Magic Kingdom. But that's, if VanVleet hits just one more three and Kyle Lowry hits two or three like he's expected, then the tenor of this game changes, depending on when they actually hit those shots. But, you know, the butterfly effect of it all is when they're hitting shots, then the momentum changes and, you know, you're playing with a lead versus from playing from behind, and the pressure of who takes which shot when, and maybe Siakam doesn't force certain shots when you are up five versus being down five. And then, you know, the entire flow of the game changes. So as much as we're talking about these big adjustments, I wonder from my perspective, like asking you the question, is there a fear? Like, what would Nick Nurse just be sitting there saying, like, okay, yes, we can tinker, but do we have to go too crazy changing what we're good at if Fred and Kyle just hit a few more shots that changes things so dramatically that could just be the only thing we need?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what happened in the Bucks last year in games 1 and 2, where they go down 0-2. Yes, they weren't very good in game 2, but they were excellent in game 1 and almost pulled it out. And then going into game 3, the conversation was, oh, does Marc Gasol lose his starting job? And how do they change things up here? And obviously that's the game where they, you know, make the decision to put Kawhi on Giannis. And again, large elephant in the room for all of this is the Raptors don't have Kawhi Leonard anymore. So making these adjustments is a little more difficult.
That should be an adjustment that Nick Nurse should make. He should go get Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard, go just like borrow him from the Clippers. He's in the bubble. You can just go like over to him and say, hey, dude, want to come over for a game, you know, European soccer style, just on loan. But Nurse has been, you know, he's sort of lauded as this very creative outside the box thinker who will make wild adjustments and throw out these crazy lineups and ski high school defenses, but when it comes to his lineup decisions, he's been pretty sort of trusting of his guys. You know, all season long he's had his like main seven that he trusts, and that's been his seventh time. And the the playoffs last year, he sticks with Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol plays incredibly in games 4 and 3 and 4, and they win that series against Milwaukee in large part because of Gasol. And so I'm certainly sympathetic to any fear that Nurse might have of, all right, well, we're going to swap things. We're going to not play Gasol as much, and maybe that costs you, and you're kind of actively working against yourself by trying to overcorrect for something that, again, was kind of under your control in game two, where Marcus Smart goes crazy. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing. I do not envy what Nick Nurse has to decide about going into here, because, like, the season hangs on it for sure. And, you know, there's arguments for a bunch of different things. And there's also arguments for just kind of keeping things the same as they were, because, again, process wise, they probably should have won that game. And right. So it's very difficult. I think another thing too, just sort of small, you know, little in-game tinkering things. A thing that bothered me about the end of game two was that Kyle Lowry didn't have the ball in his hands enough. And I love Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet is going to get paid. I hope he gets paid by the Raptors. I want him around a long time. He's excellent. But I do wonder if maybe they've kind of skewed a little bit too far towards having Kyle work off ball with Fred have the ball in his hands, just because Fred can sort of be slow to make decisions, whereas Kyle is very direct and is not afraid to just, like, all right, I'm going to drive on Robert Williams and stick my ass into him and score. And, you know, as much as Kyle hasn't hit his three so far in this series, I think has been very good. I think he's been the best Raptor so far. He, you know, his defense remains incredible, obviously, and his playmaking has been there, and he's been getting to the basket reasonably well as well. So I think if he can just, like, again, hit a couple extra threes, like you said, having Kyle with the ball in his hands a little bit more often just feels more threatening to me than Fred kind of dribbling it 12 times and then getting the clock down to 10 in your stuff. And there's certainly value in what Fred does. And, you know, Van Vliet's 3-point shooting has come so far. The pull-up game for him has been amazing. Amazing so far in the first round. But I wonder if maybe just sort of changing the hierarchy a little bit and having Kyle work with the ball in his hands, work pick and roll with Siakam, work the thing that all season long Raptors people have been pointing to as sort of the reason for optimism when it comes to the half court offense, because it hasn't been amazing, but in crunch time, they've been ridiculous and have been just destroying teams with Lowry, Siakam pick and rolls. And we haven't really seen that at all so far. It's been a lot of Siakam. It's been a lot of Fred just kind of working his stuff. It's been a lot of post-ups for Pascal. And there hasn't been a lot of that just, like, rudimentary backbone play that's been so, so good in the most important moments for the Raptors this year. And I think I'd like to see that. And again, that kind of goes to the small lineup thing too. If you can, you know, have shooting all over the floor, stick OG and Norm in the corners and have Pascal screen for you, like, that becomes a real problem if these guys are hitting their shots. And obviously, if they're not, then the Raptors are screwed and this is going to be a short series. But I think there's some things, you know, sort of macro in terms of playing small and all that stuff, but also just, like, little tiny in-game tweaks in terms of who's initiating a little bit more often than others. And I'm not, like, totally out on the idea that this is going to get still going to go 7, which I think most people predicted. I think the Raptors are very, very good at adjustments. As you mentioned, though, this is a very, very bad matchup, and there are a lot of obstacles in the way of the Raptors sort of solving this thing. And it may never come, but it might just be that they scrape by and just sort of win on championship gumption and stuff like that, which, like, I guess they can do. But yeah, there's no doubt that this is not an easy matchup for the Raptors to overcome. Any final thoughts here, John, before we end this and send people into game 3?
Yeah, you know, it's just, what's really hard about analyzing this series, and maybe this is just because it's a function of the playoffs, is just so many things that feel like aberrations all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to figure out what's really real. And you can say, well, if Fred VanVleet does this and if Kyle Lowry does this, then we're fine. I'm sitting here looking like, well, if Jaylen Brown just shoots like he normally shot, then that changes the dynamic. If Kemba Walker goes, you know, shoots a normal percentage in his, you know, he doesn't shoot 6 of 18 and doesn't only make 1 3 in this game. This game feels a little bit more comfortable for the Celtics because he was missing a bunch of pull-up shots that he would normally, it feels like those are the shots he'd normally hit. Robert Williams, like 10 for 10 in this series. Where did that come from? Like there are a lot of
care for that one.
Yeah. But there's a lot of things you sit there and you say, well, you know, things will level off. I don't know. If one thing levels off, I feel like it's just like moving the water from one cup to another. And if you get enough cups of water over there, like where does the next bit of water go? So you level one thing off. Do you fix one problem but create another one? And as I look at it and just see the things that can be done differently, yeah, you guys really benefit from making some shots, but I think the Celtics can benefit from Daniel Theis just, making some of the layups that he would normally hit, from just being better on the offensive end, from, getting back on defense, just a little bit more. They had a few inexplicable, poor transition moments there where if they could just focus on just cleaning those things up, then it kind of doesn't matter. I don't think so. I don't want to sit there and be like, well, this is going to be a sweep, but in the first two games, I haven't sat there and said, well, the Celtics were overmatched. Like I think Toronto probably deserved to win game two, but I don't think they imposed their will on the Celtics where you sit there and you say, wow, all right, Toronto's better. Like this is at best an even series where it could still go seven for sure. Absolutely for sure. But if Toronto can't get their act together, if those guys still can't find their shooting touch early, then I'm curious to see what happens as things start to trend downward. The only thing I would say that is in your favor is that the Celtics do have a real tendency when things start looking comfortable to play comfortable, and they kind of like, that's when the lapses happen. So if Toronto gets down big in the first half, I wouldn't be surprised at like a big third quarter from Toronto as Boston kind of like loafs back in transition thinking that they got this, it's cool. So I don't know. I like what I've seen from the Celtics. I don't see any magic pill from Toronto other than play better.
Yep. And don't look as old as you have, Marc Gasol, please. I think it is the ultimate telltale sign that this is a very close matchup in that it is the aberrations that are deciding it. And there's not some trump card anyone has played. It's just, Marcus Smart did that. And, Fred VanVleet didn't do that and all that. So, it's all... There are no trump cards until Matt Thomas comes in his threes, is what I'm saying.
Of course.
I think there's been talk. We might see Matt Thomas in game three, which, not very good defensively, but in terms of being a horrifying offensive threat for every single defense that comes across him for 2 minutes a game, I'm not against the idea. I need something off the bench because the bench has been dreadful. And if you're looking on paper, like where the advantages lie for each of these teams going into this, like the bench and the depth clearly seemed like in the Raptors' favor.
Absolutely.
That has not played out. They're not winning those minutes right now where, there's on the bench. They're not winning the transitional minutes, and it's just, it's not great. So here's hoping that it can be not great if you're a Raptors fan going into game three. I think the Raptors are going to win game three. It doesn't feel like they're going to It just doesn't feel like a rollover and die. This isn't the Sixers, man. This is
I wouldn't expect them to.
And likes each other. Yeah. So I would expect the Raptors win game three, but who the hell knows? It's again, coin flip series upon which strange differences are kind of deciding it all. So, John, this was lovely, man. It was great chatting with you. It's always fun to do podcasts, even though I'm in a not so good mood today. Apparently, you're not in a good mood either, but you should be, as we talked about at the top, to close this all in a tidy bow. Where can people check out the podcast and all your work?
It's Locked On Celtics. You can find my written work at masslive.com/Celtics. And find me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John, where I'm blatantly self-promoting most of the day.
Hell yeah. Shout out to Blatant Self-Promotion. You get all that from me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. Subscribe to Locked On Raptors as well. Ratings, reviews, all that stuff is very, very much appreciated. John, you're also doing Locked On NBA, correct?
I am on Wednesdays, generally.
Go check that out too. Locked On NBA with you and Jake Madison on Wednesday. You guys do wonderful, wonderful work. And that's going to do it for this little crossover. I'm sure we'll do one again either before the series is out or as a sort of looking back at a horrible sweep or something like that. But I look forward to chatting with you again, buddy.
You got it, man.
Fun conversation there with me and Sean. Hope you go subscribe to their podcast. It's fun to listen to what the other side has to think. You see the game from a certain perspective. They see the game from a different perspective. It's always great to get both. It makes you a more knowledgeable fan. You get to understand how the other side is seeing things. You get to understand really how one-sided sometimes we see things, right? So go subscribe to them. Go subscribe if you're one of the Raptors listeners or if you're a new Celtics fan that's checking out this podcast for the first time. Please subscribe to this show. I really would appreciate that. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy our shows. We're Monday through Friday. So back with a post-game three podcast, hopefully a 3-0 lead podcast. So if you haven't subscribed, do that. 5-star rating, good written review would be awesome. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.